Today on Talk to T, we welcome Indris Pichai, a transpersonal depth psychologist in private practice. Indris describes herself as an elder growing and learning every day from other humans and all of nature we share this earth with. Indris experiences being a therapist as a form of midwifery, assisting people to give birth to those parts of themselves that bring most meaning and connection to each person's heart and soul. She deeply believes in our capacity to become more and more our essential self, and that this is what heals our world. Let's dive in. Indris, welcome to Talk to T. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited to have you.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Tracy. This is great. We get to just chat.
Yes, exactly. And today we're going to chat about something in particular, which is a lot of people are struggling with despair and hopelessness for various and different reasons. Today we're going to discuss what can be done, what are some first steps, and everything else in between.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm excited to share the things that I've learned mostly from my clients.
Yes.
My own personal journey for sure, but I learned so much, as I've said to you often, from the people who honor me by sitting with me.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And we've talked a little off air in terms of, you know, our focus has intensified since COVID, but we're, you know, setting the stage for this conversation to be much broader, to span pre-COVID and, you know, and not to circle or necessarily anchor in COVID, but what's maybe been illuminated, better said. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's be an illusion for people to believe that, okay, we'll get past COVID somehow. And the struggles that have, I believe, been intensified and added layers and complexities by COVID are going to change or disappear. Mm-hmm. I think human despair, people at times are spending a lot of time in a sense of hopelessness, is part of humans, mm-hmm. part of who we are. And I don't think we should be afraid of that. I'm interested in what could we do more? And is there ways to spend less time there? How do we manage it better? How do we cope with it better? Rather than trying to create a life where it never happens. It's like trying to have a relationship, you know me and relationships and my work there.
Yes.
When, you know, trying to create an issue-free relationship is futile. It's not going to happen. So then it's managing, coping, what new things can we bring in to just feel like we're not in a place where we're powerless. So I have a strong belief in humans' ability to empower themselves and each other. And I think that's what ultimately keeps us going in what I still believe are a lot of good directions without ignoring or trying to sweep under the rugs the many issues that are real, that face us, that also add to the sense of despair and hopelessness. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm finding more and more as a psychologist and working with so many different people and so many different cultures and reasons why they come, it's both personal, but there's also what many of us are finding over the last decade or so, an increasing amount of personal despair, sense of hopelessness. Some people might call it depression around the state of the world. What are we going to leave to our children and grandchildren? So many experiences, my life's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I'm still having these experiences that don't necessarily match my personal life. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the prices we pay for empathy.
Yes.
But it's a price worth paying. And I think we can manage both the personal and the collective better.
Mm.
So that's what I hope we're going to, what we're going to talk about today.
I have this idea that even what we're doing here, by daring to talk about it, is actually part of the journey.
I hope so. And, you know, even if one person out there goes, oh, maybe I could not have it be the thing that I dread so much. I'm going to bring in here something that I think about sometimes around this. And it has been, I love to just think and play with ideas. I call it my wonderings. I just, it's not like I know or things are black and white, but I do wonder about things a lot. And a lot of times it's brought me to some pretty good places for me. And one of them is around living in, I think, today's world, and I think maybe it's true for every single person that's ever lived in whatever times they were living in, who knows? But we use the word trauma a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all have trauma. We have big T, little T, and I kind of almost want to find new words for that and not have such a general term. But part of despair and hopelessness seems to be when people go into the freeze response of trauma. And, you know, that sense of there's nothing I can do.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the definition. Why I think, you know, despair and hopelessness are such hard things to work with in a way is because by their very nature, they limit our sense of possibility and potential. They don't allow our creative nature, which I think is where we solve things from, where we can move things from. It sort of shuts that down. So it almost seems like it creates a freeze response because we have fight, flight, or freeze. And probably other things too, but those three cover a lot of it. So one of the ways that I offer for folks who find themselves in that place, it's okay to have time in it. It's okay to sort of like accept, oh, it just feels like it's too much. I don't know what to do. I can't imagine. This feels terrible. And it does. It feels horrible. You know, whether it's our personal thing, what's happening to us, we're watching a loved one or somebody who we care deeply about, or something in our world. And of course, we know everything that's going on in our world. And there's no shortage of things that one of those sort of ways of working about is to find those things for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to balance what's coming in and, you know, what you're getting saturated with, whether it's personal or the big picture and the huge world problems and issues. So you've got to figure out what uplifts you, what gives you hope, what inspires, what promotes creativity for you. And you have to find ways, even in the midst of that kind of despair and hopelessness, to find some way to balance and say, yes, this is true. I have a serious issue right now I have to face. And I also have to find ways to be inspired enough to that critical question of, is there one little thing I can do? Even if it's a tiny step, it could be as simple as making a phone call that day. It could be, I just need to take care of myself differently. I need to change my narrative. I have to be careful right now about what I'm telling myself, so I don't feed, there's nothing I can do, there's no place for this, this will never change. Those kind of loops that we can get into so easily. Part of it is like, today's terrible. This is really hard. And I don't believe I'm going to stay here forever. Just that simple difference of the narrative.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about the importance of a certain kind of acceptance. Okay, this is where I'm at right now. This is what I feel right now. But it's a kind of acceptance that for me means possibility and potential, not collapse and there's nothing I can do about it. I think if you need to sit with it and be quiet and listen to that deep inner knowing that we all have, and find one small thing, which may just be more self-care that day. It could be more, I'm going to be really careful about what I'm saying to myself, what language I'm using. It could be some form of action. I'm going to make a phone call. I'm going to make a decision about, oh, I'm going to give 3 hours to one little thing that I think is important that I can do in my own community, and I'm going to take the pressure off me about trying to figure out the whole world situation. But that sense of there's always some possibilities and things do change.
Indeed they do. As you're speaking, you know, my mind is listening and can't help but like completely resonate there. You've known me through many chapters of my life.
I have.
And I remember in moments where I actually experienced despair and yeah. hopelessness.
Yes.
Having someone just simply even be with you to provide that ear and a carefully crafted question, supporting you to be exactly where you are, and yet reminding in some clever way that the moment is the moment, mm-hmm. and there's always the next moment mm-hmm. with the opportunity for things to change, was almost like this massive lightning bolt of suddenly now my freeze is, you know, you're releasing and your body is responding and there's fluidity coming back into your way of being. But just the grips of that hopelessness and despair in that moment, it truly is just like it's a body function yeah. that needs honored, attended to. And and a small action may even be just that recognizing that you, I remember when I said out loud, oh my goodness, I'm experiencing hopelessness. I'm experiencing despair. Mm-hmm. Even that small action was the great release. Because sure. suddenly I didn't have to sit with it and hold it or, yes, interesting.
Because if it's named, I mean, this is what's happening so much with even shadow work and that mm-hmm. Canada and the world is dealing with so much. Once something gets named, it's possible for it to get more light on it. Or, you know, from a depth psychology perspective, we sometimes use alchemical sort of references. Mm-hmm. It's the operation of sublimatio, which is to bring in air perspective, the element of air where we rise above something a little bit so that we can get a much broader sort of experience of it. And that's even what naming it does in a way. It opens up a little bit more room. It gives mm-hmm. it more space. to be looked at differently.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, like so many wonderful people like yourself have taught me. I mean, I sometimes sit with people and go, whoa, they are really in it. I'm not sure how they're going to move this.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, being in my 70s now, I've hit 70. it's wonderful, actually. I've learned so much through the years, so many different journeys, so many seemingly, oh man, boy, what life brings people. And yet I've been able to have that incredible privilege of seeing the journey and where people arrive at and how things can shift and change. Even, and I'll say this, even if the journey's been a health crisis that completed in the death cycle.
Yeah.
Some of those journeys have been some of the most meaningful and really so much richness happened in some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Humans have taught me so much is possible. So much can come from despair and hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
That our capacity to help ourselves to change things that need to be changed, I believe it's bigger than we realize most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lesson that I've learned from others. Yeah, and it's given me a lot of resilience for my own personal life when despair and hopelessness arrive at my door.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the guest house from Rumi, that poem from Rumi.
Yeah, I love that.
All joy, sorrow, grief, despair, hopelessness, laughter. I mean, it will arrive. They're all guests at our door, and life brings it all, usually, for people.
Yeah.
To try to slam the door in its face usually doesn't work, which is why we've used this word about moving to acceptance. And then from there, what is possible?
Yeah. And I think, and I'll thank you for this, it's that often we use words such as embrace. And of course, I'm hugely fascinated by language, which is a lot of my background and training. And so for me, words are super meaningful. And it is interesting when I capture a phrase and I'm using the word embrace, which I shared with you off air. I looked up and realized it was to actually surrender to something with jubilation and joy. And I was like, oh, no, not that. But acceptance is that we may not like what we're experiencing. It might be entirely uncomfortable. It might mean, you know, and I know times in my life too, which I'm not, you know, afraid to share, is my heart pounding and waking up middle of the night, you know, like truly, like feeling it, gripped with it. And calming the body down, the movement through it, the, you know, I lived through it and continue to walk through it.
Right.
And it was acceptance. I didn't like my circumstances. And it was in the accepting that, okay, these are the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think you said, and then, you know, looking at the facts, and then bringing heart. There was something about trust, you know, trust that is the illusion or is the thing that you kind of mentioned in Rumi, or what I like to think supports me with that, Rumi. And that is, it's not if it will happen, is it will happen. You know, I don't think we can travel a rich life, as you said, mm-hmm. without experiencing these things. So, you know, I get to choose in the moment what my narrative will be around the things that arrive.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does take a lot of faith and trust just to live a life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the wonderful, really one of the founders of transpersonal psychology, my forte, and, you know, a great wise woman. She passed a couple of years ago, but Frances Vaughan, who, you know, if people don't know her, she's, you know, she's worth looking up. She made wonderful contributions to the whole area of not only psychology, but spirituality and its impact. And she wrote a book really around all the negativity around some spiritual, the problems with, you know, sexuality and the different shadow aspects that come out in spiritual communities and religions and whatnot. The Shadow of the Sacred was the name of the book. But she also talked a lot about making friends with the mystery.
Ooh.
And part of what happens, I think, when we're in hopelessness and despair is we don't know what's going to happen. And that's so much of it. We don't know that we're going to arrive in a better place. And we have to really grasp the trust and the faith that if we try to make whatever best choice we can make in the moment, that we'll eventually arrive at some place that isn't the state, that doesn't feel this way. And yet it takes some energy. And one of the problems with hopelessness and despair is we don't seem to have our life force energy available.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what I'm doing is asking people to try to do small little changes, even when they feel like they can't do anything. And maybe that just means having some self-compassion that day. But I would say that's a big thing.
One of the things that's worked for me in the past is my deep connection to nature.
Oh, yeah.
And I find I'm a very hard marker on self, as you know. And sometimes self-compassion can only be accessed. That's my narrative. I'll own that. You know, by putting my hands in the soil, mm-hmm. you know, going out to the garden or walking in nature or hitting the beach. And in my younger days, it was, you know, going for a run and getting the endorphins flowing or breaking a sweat, even though my body probably doesn't like me for that very much anymore. But, yeah. You know, there's just such a an incredible grounding nature in nature.
Yeah. And we need to find where those places are for ourselves.
Yes.
And, you know, if you don't know where that place is for yourself, keep experimenting until you find it. And there's usually not just one. For me, sometimes it may be music. And other times it's got to be getting out there in nature like you. But they can ground us, and I think they help us switch states. Mm-hmm. They're all part of how we begin to move our state of being even in a little tiny bit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe nature's here to help us love ourselves more than we love ourselves. I actually sometimes have, and this sounds kind of woo-wee-woo-wee, but I'm going to say
welcome
it anyway.
That.
I've had a sensation sometimes in nature, and I have had profound experiences there, that nature actually loves us and wants us not to suffer as much, which is why for me, it's so interconnected and important that we take better care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe some of what our suffering about is when we're not taking care of those things that we know are sacred in our world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that causes despair. And I think if we don't know what we can do about it, and we feel like there's nothing we can do about it, that's And I think there's always a little something, even if it's not. I don't think we should be so worried about grand gestures. I don't think we should be thinking about individuals saving the world. I think small acts, small ways of being, just one little thing adding to the collective, I do believe it makes a difference.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's interesting because I think that's key too, to, you know, supporting ourselves out of or through hopelessness and despair. Again, it comes back to that one small act can be the very thing that, you know, making the phone call or, you know, stop using plastic bags or whatever it is in your household.
Right.
You know, one small change, you're right, contributes to the collective. And it does add up over time versus focus on one individual saving this, that, or the other. I think where we attach ourselves to that one individual or that one group being the thing that's going to save us actually contributes to, like, it's kind of like a booby trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that gets stopped or stymied, or we find out that individual, there's, you know, like wrongdoings or dealings, like, you know, again, we're back in that cycle of, oh, now what? Rather than, hey, what's something you can do on the ground, as I like to see, say, like, you know, boots on the ground work. What can you do in your neighborhood, your home, your, in your body, in nature itself? I share that love of nature too. Okay. And I do believe what you said about nature loves us and or truly wants us, you know, to thrive mm-hmm. in unison with it.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that. And I have a question that would love your thoughts on this. There are extraordinary people in the world that are very sensitive. Maybe I think that we're all massively sensitive, and perhaps those that don't experience themselves as sensitive as others maybe just haven't explored it yet. Who knows? I don't have the answer there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those individuals who is like hypersensitive to things. I remember walking with my partner on the Sydney Pier and watching fishermen, and someone caught a fish that was small that I knew they didn't want. And it's a funny experience, but I'm so in love with nature that I got panic struck in the moment because the individual and I was watching the fish flounder, and it was being ignored for a time while the individual was doing something else. And I kind of panicked. And I was, before I knew it, I was like crying about this fish. And that's my experience of many things. I find the world quite painful sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that kind of sensitivity? I know I'm not alone.
Yeah. And you're certainly not alone, Elaine. Ahrens wrote a couple of books, Highly Sensitive People.
Yes.
That help people understand themselves. I certainly, one of my children, I would categorize as highly sensitive.
Yeah.
Certainly clients. I mean, just this week, I had yet another person say to me, it's like I don't belong here. This is too hard being here. And I've heard that many times over the years.
My whole website is that. Because that's learning to navigate the world as a highly sensitive individual has required. I actually joke with my clients, you know, I say, I need a lot of scaffolding to actually be me, you know, and to provide that shiny reflective surface that is required for the job that I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful thing that people can feel things so, so deeply. I'm going to bring in the importance of having things that help you remember this polarity that we all live in. There's all kinds of polarities. I think part of being an adult, part of certainly, I think, to be wise, one of the definitions maybe of wisdom is learning and growing your capacity to hold polarities in a way. Mm. I would offer it as one of the definitions of wisdom versus just people who are old. I think there's a difference. We live in a really tragic world. Maybe maybe mankind's always been tragic. We haven't been very good to ourselves, and we haven't been very good to nature or animals or those who we share this place called Earth. We all know that. We know everything about it now. We know everything about our history, or at least versions of it that we've come to accept as history. And it's hard, I think, in a way, more and more to be human. We know a lot about ourselves, and some of it we don't like at all. Like most of us, I find it so hard. It is so sensitive. It's so vulnerable in a way. And yet we create incredible acts of beauty, and we do a lot for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we create, we actually die for things that we think are important enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're trying to move towards something. And I get it. A lot of times it feels like, well, some of us are and some of us aren't. And there the divide happens. When we were just chatting before this, we mentioned Steven Pinker.
Yes.
And I'll offer that I think for people that are highly sensitive, they have to find the places that uplift them. And I'll use that word again. I used it earlier. They mm-hmm. have to find the places they can go to believe that though the world hits them so hard, that there's reason to believe that we're moving in good directions. And for those of you who don't know Steven Pinker, he's a thinker and a writer. He's a psychologist, an evolutionary psychologist. He was born in Canada, actually taught at Harvard many years. One of his first books is Angels of Our Better Nature. He also was part of a PBS special, a Nova special a couple of years ago that was on the paradox of violence. And for those of you who, it's not just his opinion, he's done a lot of deep research. And his research shows that counter to what we believe, when all we hear about is the acts of violence we seem to do on one another, that we're becoming less violent. And our brains are changing a lot. And our capacity to find other ways of resolving things is actually increasing. And he's not Pollyanna about this. He would be the first one to admit, listen, we're in critical times here. This is no time to let our guard down.
Mm.
But he also asks people not to buy into being hopeless about who we are as humans, which is the beginning of being able to do something about hopelessness and despair. If we don't believe in us, it's hard to get rid of that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'm really answering your question. I wouldn't define myself as highly sensitive. I'm not sure I could do what I do if that were true. But I do feel a lot. And I think anybody alive who isn't feeling a lot, I don't know what's happening for them, actually.
Yeah.
I do think that for people who are very sensitive, and feel like everything that somebody else might not notice, they notice. Because a lot of it's about your attention's brought to places that some other people wouldn't feel or pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to believe in sort of the big picture, in that even if it doesn't seem like it in the moment, I know for me, one of the things that I'm still coming to terms with, and one of the processes for me in my 60s was the world's not going to change and be in the place that I wanted it to be before I die.
Mm.
You know, when I was 20 and I had this vision of where the world was going to go. But it doesn't mean that I don't believe in us.
Yes.
Or in our capacity to continue to help each other all have a better life.
Yeah.
That I don't think we're using money. I think there's a lot of critical foundational pieces that, you know, that are big pieces that have to be revisioned, recreated. I don't think there's any doubt in that for me. And I can imagine it's even harder for highly sensitive people to see there's so much that's just so wrong and it's so obvious.
Yeah.
But I do believe in our capacity to recreate and revision.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in humanity. I believe in all of our women, non-binary, you know, whatever way that they want to be part of our species. I believe we all have things to offer. And I know that sounds like, who is she kidding? But I actually believe that.
Mm.
Maybe highly sensitive people, if they can bear it, they can even help us see more of the things that we need to be paying attention to. I think it's one of the gifts they offer.
Yeah.
And I thank them for being here on Earth and pointing out some of the things that others may not see. And it's so hard for them to see so much.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. I know that the one thing that I think I was always also gifted with when I was born was exactly as you described, that deep, deep belief in humankind. Mm-hmm. And it's unwavering.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you just said something really brilliant, which turned a lot of lights on for me. And that was the thing that you came to terms with, is that you may not necessarily see through to the thing that you thought you might in your 20s, that, you know, we're, you know, one of my things is that world at peace with love and light, pardon me, which is my purpose. And I deeply believe in it. It was something that was shared with me, but totally resonated as though it had already existed in me. It was the strangest experience and super powerful. And it's not even a quest that brings despair. It flows through me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really get that my intuition tells me that I've, by the nature of who I am, I'm causing a trajectory that I may not see and be able to high five you at the end and say, we did it. Yeah. But that the trajectory that I've caused by the nature of who I am and the work that I choose to do with in the world is contributing in some way.
Exactly.
The conversations I'm causing, the...
Yeah. And I believe in collective energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how it works. I'm not sure. My spiritual beliefs are kind of, they change and they somewhat, but you know, I don't have a belief of, you know, personally, I don't believe I'm going to come back and do this again.
Mm.
But for me, it's important that I do the best that I can and try to see if there's energy that contributes in some ways to us keep moving this incredible experiment of our species and how we're going to do it better. How we're actually going to, and by that I mean honoring the sacredness of everything around us, other humans, but the earth itself, all the things that we talk about.
Yeah.
Like, I think we could get much, much better at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, I won't live to see it all, but it mm-hmm. doesn't mean that I don't believe in it or that makes me sad.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that I had a chance to have a life,
mm-hmm.
to try. I think I've learned a lot and I think I'm a little bit better at adding the kind of energy that I want to add, because part of despair and hopelessness is also involved in fear. And that's a bigger way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can hold on to certain kind of belief factors, fear doesn't have a chance to grip you as tightly as it can. So it's nice being older and sort of coming to terms with some of these bigger things. Mm. I have children and grandchildren. I will do my best. I love this phrase, not on my watch.
Ah, yes.
I will do my best till the time that I'm not able to contribute anymore. to take care of myself and to see what I can do. And it'll be a very small contribution, but it will be mine.
Thank you. I would never think to correct you, except for I think you underestimate the wake that you leave with the nature of who you are. Having had the distinct honor of knowing you as long as I have, I'm like, wow, the impact that is you bringing so much peace, just even in your way of being. You say very little, but it's the experience of peace that you just generate. It almost seems effortless, that actually brings hope and that faith about in mankind in whatever form that faith is defined by many different people.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Yeah. What else do you think we might have not touched on in our talk today?
I wanted to go back to something that you brought up that I want to hear from you about.
Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
Because it intrigued me. You mentioned it in the email, and then we had a very quick, brief thing about it. The idea that sometimes when we're in a state like that, and then we get, and I want you to talk about it because I really want to hear exactly what you mean, that you use the word that a bombardment almost of positivity.
Oh, yes.
Or like an expectance that we're going to be able to, okay, well, we're not going to name this thing that's here. We're going to get on with things and pull up your boots and or whatever it is. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that because I think it's an important point.
So it is important. And I think that, like you, you call them your wonderings. And for me, I'm a pattern watcher. And so, you know, collecting data, these, you know, looking for pattern, it's just habit. And I began thinking, musing is what I call it, about what I was noticing in terms of pattern, you know, working with an organization and, you know, working with this one over here. And, you know, it's far and wide, it's across Canada. So like, you know, there's the a lot of variables to have me recognize, okay, we got something here that's crossing many borders and boundaries, right? It's the, and it was the experience that when working with folks, you know, might start working with them on a particular goal or, you know, performance thing within their org or their team or, you know, and recognizing that there was almost like a shame around talking about or the thing that was actually giving them or where their despair or hopelessness was coming from.
Right.
There was a shame to name it. Like, don't talk about our, you know, company's finances.
We're don't just talk about the big problem.
Exactly. And don't admit you're exhausted. Don't admit you're overwhelmed. Don't, you know, like we're going to soldier on and we're going to avoid that thing. And we're going to look over here. And there's also noticing a culture of positivity. And I, like the next person, love me a good quote and affirmation. And very much believe in the power of that work in shifting. And I just noticed that there's particular ways those are being used almost to bully, like, well, you create your world, so, and what you focus on grows, that actually was detrimental to people's health. Like, oh, I should be able to focus on the positive. I should be able, rather than, and I think it comes back to, or maybe ties into our notion of acceptance, is that even in my work with people, permission to say what's so, then actually supports them, leverages them to begin to, it's like rungs of the ladder, like climbing up and out of that deep, dark well.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I was, you know, musing and thinking about. And I remember at one point it, you know, got personal because I was like, wow, if I see, it was a day where I think personal doorstep had a pile of Amazon packages of despair. And, you know, that sense of hopelessness and, you know, being met with a lot of positivity and, well, what you focus on grows, which felt, you know, you may have as well just landed me the last Amazon package that collapsed me, that got me thinking about it. And I thought, this isn't actually healthy nor what I need in this moment. What do I need? And then the patterns emerging in other people for me to take a step back and look at it. Huh, what have I caught here?
Yeah, there are some concepts, I think, and I'll even call it pop psychology, that I think have been useful and have served, and we have to be careful not to get locked into some of them. I mean, again, it's this polarity thing. Yes, we create our own feelings, and nobody can make us feel a certain way. But the way people treat us impact us greatly.
Yes.
What people say to us, it doesn't mean that we have permission. Well, this person can just get what they get from people, and they should be able to deal with it and not be impacted because nobody else can create their feelings for them. It's just not that simple. We do affect and impact each other, and to move things in a, to get that pendulum to swing in the direction that feels better, the first step is, well, we've got a problem here. Let's name it. Let's try to see, particularly in organizations or when you get groups, hopefully what you're getting is more input and more creativity and more ideas about what can we do about this. But the same thing happens in like families, or the worst thing in the world is where everybody wants to pretend there isn't a problem that's there. Gee, we got a kid in serious trouble here, but you know, we'll give them more time and they don't want to talk about it, so I won't want to talk about it. Let's just soldier on here and hope this gets better on its own. I mean, anybody who's been able to move themselves from addictions will tell you the turning point is naming it. I've got a huge problem. I have to take responsibility here. I've got to figure out where I can move from here.
Yeah.
But to keep pretending this isn't such a problem, or this isn't, I can deal with this. Hey, it's only a little, you know, once in a while, it's only this or that, or I'm managing this somehow, when somewhere else in them, they know this isn't being managed at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if that speaks to it, but sure, there's lots of room for positivity. And we also have to know when to say, I'm not just going to pretend and get on board this everything's fine train when everything isn't fine. Because I believe in our capacity to take the thing that isn't fine and to move it in a direction that's going to be what we, the word we use is better.
The thought occurred to me while you were speaking there that often in the world of transformation, and I know this is something you and I have talked about a lot, is that there's, I like to call it the edge of what is perceived as excruciating. And we then, you know, tip over into great ahas and awareness and shift, and, you know, and it can be something that we cause actively, which might be next level of our business, or it, you know, or it might be something that causes us, something that lands on your doorstep and you're suddenly standing with a package you don't want. Not to keep using that, you know, Amazon metaphor, but it's the edge between that which you can stand in versus that which you know you need to back away with from. Too painful versus transformational. And I think sometimes there's a mistake made that transformation is excruciating. So therefore you must be able to withstand it in order to be a, you know, transformational coach or a transformed individual. That is part of the fallacy. And yeah, it's an interesting edge to play with and talk about and through. I I'm not hard fixed on I have the answer. It's just it's another musing, and I'm inviting you into my musing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you were talking, you know, it's like, this is the hard reality. Not everybody else, not everyone makes the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Some people aren't able, for so many different reasons, they're not able to move that state, and they stay in a state that isn't the life that they want to be living.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true. That's yes. Part of, let's not spin that if everybody just does X, Y, and Z, they're all going to land up so much better and so much happier. A lot of people will, but not everyone. And it's something I've had to accept about my profession.
Yes.
We don't help everyone. I haven't helped everyone. I haven't been able, and I don't take it on personally. I do my best. And I don't even try to analyze everything. At least I don't spend much time there. You know, and sometimes there are times that I say to people, I don't think it's a good time for you to make a lot of changes. I actually think you need to just stay in stability for a while and think more about what sequence, you know, because sometimes people just blow their lives up, and that's different than transformation. There's a lot of change that happens. And yes, something gets transformed maybe, but often there's a lot of damage that was never intended and takes a lot of work to clean up.
Yeah, I really resonate with that. Sorry.
No, and I'm just saying, and yet people, you know, Campbell would call it the heroine's journey. You know, mm-hmm. He named the 7 steps of it. We do make these incredible journeys. Sometimes people arrive at a place where they just like, well, if I only had known in the beginning that my life could change in this way. Mm-hmm. Like, as I said earlier, that's just one of the great privileges of what I do sometimes, to sort of see people in a place that, wow, their life actually has changed, and they're so engaged in their life in a different kind of a way. They're actually living much more. They're becoming themselves, is what I say.
Yeah, I love that you hold that.
You know, it's the only thing I want for people, that they get an opportunity to become more and more themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, it truly is just the most beautiful thing to watch. And
yeah,
it's just so.
Yeah. It is. It's like art in motion, really.
Yeah, it's the miracle of what humans have capacity for, that we can see. It's actualized.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thought in terms of, you know, if we can gift our audience with that, is to remember that that is what they're becoming, is that beautiful piece of art that honed and crafted.
Yeah.
And it's like a sculpture revealed, isn't it?
It is. And yes, we're so much alike in so many ways. And we want so much the same things.
Yeah.
And we're so unique and incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's extraordinary, actually, to me, when mm-hmm. I, you know, just the nuance of who people are, like what makes them them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, when people become more themselves, everything gets better around them.
So true.
And to be comfortable in your own skin, I mean, part of being comfortable in your own skin, at least for me, is, okay, I got all these warts I'm still working on, and that's fine. I know what they are. I'm committed to doing what I can. And I'm a work in progress, and I'm going to die a work in progress. But I am going to be in progress. I'm going to keep trying to become. It's just an easier place to live life from, if that makes any sense.
It certainly does. It definitely resonates for me, and I'm sure will definitely resonate for our listeners.
I hope so. Yeah. It's been such fun doing this.
You're such an incredible human, Indris. Oh,
thank you. That's very kind of you to say that. I just want to say hello to the people who are out there who I'm never going to meet probably and might hear this. And I mean this in all sincerity. I wish you well. And I believe in each and every one of you's capacity to work with any despair or hopelessness that you encounter in your life. I believe that you'll be able to change that state for yourself in small ways and larger ways. I believe in your journey. Oh,
thank you so much, Indris.
Thank you. This has been lovely.
It's great to have you.
It's good to talk to other people, isn't it? It's just,
yeah. It really is. It's incredibly moving. And I think it is where we meet, you know, humankind and expand our own humanity.
Well, we can have these kind of conversations. I think it's easier to find common ground.
Yeah.
And the differences don't seem as much. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Lovely.
Take good care of yourself.
You too.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Talk to Tea with Indris Pichet. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and always leave room for a little magic in your life.